The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Italy's official news agency reporting that May 7th is the date the secret conclave to elect the next pope will begin. The new leader of the Catholic Church will lead the world's 1.4 billion Catholics. Cardinals determined the date during a closed-door meeting at the Vatican, the first since the funeral of Pope Francis on Saturday. Some 135 cardinals have gathered from across the world to take part in the conclave.
But you know what? The church is the church. We'll get, in the whole sweep of the leaders that we've had in the last 150 years, they've been the right man for the time.
And the Catholic Church is the richest and most powerful organization in the world. What power does the Pope himself actually hold in changing things from within?
One of the most controversial parts of Pope Francis' legacy is the need, urgent need, to reform the Vatican finances. As you say, the Catholic Church is the world's largest NGO, and there's a great need for increased transparency, for radical reform concerning the Vatican's finances. There are massive debts that need to be overcome.
Who then to follow Francis as cardinals converge on Rome from the four corners of the earth? We'll ask whether the faithful want a pope who's a reformer or a traditionalist. With an increasing share of the planet's 1.4 billion Catholics from the global south, it's a choice of a spiritual leader and a choice of values in a changing world. The conclave that will follow the public funeral of Francis on Saturday will be shrouded in all the mystery of closed-door dealings. In the mix, bitter disputes over spiritual doctrine, the earthly reality of a church dogged by sex scandals and debt.
Well, we've got a lot to get to. Let's first start with that meeting at the Vatican. What progress was done between President Trump and President Zelensky at the Vatican?
Well, Maria, let's just take a breath here and take a step back. How iconic that setting, that scene, that meeting is going to go down in the history books for President Trump to be a president of peace, to be talking peace and diplomacy in the Vatican of all places.
In the Vatican of all places. Oh, you mean the place that's dogged by sex scandals? That's going broke, that needs more transparency? Isn't it amazing? I mean, this illustrates everything that's wrong with this world. Even when we're surrounded by scandal and sin and violence, we talk about peace and safety, comfort, security. Let's just stop for a moment and think about the place that President Trump met with Zelensky. It was at the Vatican. How iconic. How iconic that the peacemaker shows up at the Vatican and we're going to have peace. And we're supposed to just ignore the scandals and I guess play along. You're listening to Stephen Fleury and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. We're off and running on another week of broadcasting. You can get to the live video stream of this show at trumpetdaily.com or at the Rumble channel. Just go to rumble.com/trumpetdaily. And so depending upon the reporting, either Putin's just playing Donald Trump or they're just really close. They're getting so close to peace. Listen to, this is Mike Walls. You heard him there at the end of the cold open. He was on with Fox News, clip 18.
And if you go back to, you know, we're 100 days in, Maria, just 100 days ago, Biden and his team had no end in sight. This was an endless war. This was a meat grinder of men and material and national treasure. that that really he had never defined victory. And President Trump is determined to use diplomacy to bring this war to an end, to talk to both sides. And just in 100 days, we've had multiple rounds led by Secretary of State Rubio, by Ambassador Steve Witkoff in Saudi Arabia, and now in the Vatican. And it was just truly special to stand there with other world leaders looking on as the President Trump led the way.
Yes, another iconic shot and another iconic meeting for sure that President Trump led.
So many iconic moments, so much holiness. And then in the same breath, you'll see it. You'll see it with the commentators because, I mean, the Vatican's in the spotlight right now. You heard in the cold open. I mean, they've got the date set when the conclave begins. We're going to have a new pope. Is he going to be woke? Is he going to be a woke pope or is he going to be a traditionalist pope? Because there's a lot of conservative Catholics that couldn't stand Francis. I mean, the institution, the universal religion, 1.4 billion congregants. There's quite a few prominent Catholics that just could not stand their pontiff, the Vicar of Christ. And it's an institution, as they'll report in the very same breath that they talk about iconic moments of holiness and peace. I mean, it just shows that this world, including the religions of this world, we don't know the way to peace. It's just like the prophet Isaiah prophesied, or Paul in 1 Thessalonians 5. I know I keep repeating it, but when they say peace and safety, you know what to expect. You know what's coming. You know, I mentioned this morning in class, it's kind of an obvious point. When you think about, and Paul said in 1 Timothy 2, pray for all men that this work might be given the free course that it needs to proclaim God's truth, to proclaim the true gospel message, which is about the soon coming kingdom of God. You do have to have a world view. Jesus himself said to watch and pray always. Watch world events. Think about a time, it's coming, when everyone in the world will be praying every morning, praying to God for guidance and direction. Not vain, repetitious prayers like you see so much of in the world of Christianity, but fervent, the effectual fervent prayers of righteous people, people that are living right, that are living like Jesus Christ, that are making peace. This world is just operating on human reason alone. And of course, it's influenced powerfully so by the god of this world, that is Satan the devil. And so you have, and it's been this way for thousands of years. As I said this morning as well, I mean, you know, Pilate didn't wake up the morning that Jesus was crucified and said, you know what, I want to make sure that the Son of God is murdered today. He just kind of went along. In fact, he even said, I mean, he's not guilty. But you think of the Sanhedrin, you think of Pilate, you think of Herod, and all these men just operating on carnality alone, just tossed to and fro. I mean, Pilate asked some intriguing questions of Jesus. The Sanhedrin, they reached a point where they said, what do we need to ask? He's committed blasphemy. He deserves to die. Paul said in 1 Corinthians 2 that had they known this was the Son of God, had they known God's purpose and plan, they wouldn't have crucified him. They all thought they were doing, you know, the Roman Empire or the Jewish nation a service, or God. In the case of the Sanhedrin, they thought they were doing God's work. They thought they were carrying out God's will. I mean, the world, whether it was Herodians, whether it was those supporting Pilate's administration there locally, or maybe the emperor at Rome itself, or the Sanhedrin. I mean, the Pharisees and the Sadducees were able to come together. Same with Herod and Pilate. They all agreed that this man should be put to death, or at least that the Jews should be allowed to carry out this service to their people. Pilate, of course, there's other details. Pilate washed his hands and thought, well, it's not my, I didn't make the call here. But the mob is the mob, and we've got to please these people. The Sanhedrin knew how much influence that Jesus had had, and they wanted it to fall under Roman authority there at the last. So much conniving. and you know what? It was all going on in these iconic places. The hall, the great hall where Pilate brought Jesus in to hear his side of the story. Or the hall where the Sanhedrin assembly met. The temple. I mean, you talk about some iconic places to talk about peace. And look at what mankind carried out at those very locations. It happened. I mean, all of it happened in the city of Jerusalem. You know what Jerusalem means? The city of peace. What an iconic setting for Jesus to come into town the last 6 days of his ministry, bringing the truth of God, bringing the true gospel. And how did the world react to it? How did the religious world react to it? I mean, there were some very, very religious people that wanted to murder Jesus Christ. It was a sore trial for the disciples to go through. That's why they all ran away. They fled. I mean, Judas got to the point of expressing some remorse over stabbing Jesus in the back. And then he went off and he hung himself. He obviously didn't repent. That was the world of 2,000 years ago. That was the way the world treated the Son of God. God coming in the flesh. All of these iconic places, buildings, all of these places where there had been so much history. I mean, here you listen to this Trump official in the cold open and you think, well, the Vatican, everything about that place and the history surrounding it, it's just about peace. Really? Look into history, but leave aside Bible prophecy for a moment. Just read up on the history. The Holy Roman Empire in prophecy. Is it holy? Well, not the way that God defines it. Is it holy and pure and righteous like Christ, this institution that's just being dogged by scandal? Yeah, commentators, they bring even Catholic commentators. Sex scandal, financial scandals, political, you know, tug of wars, lots of politics. It's a very worldly organization, as I've been saying. Now, those of us in God's family, God's church, I mean, obviously, we're battling against sin every day of our lives as well. But if you look at the qualifications for an elder, 1 Timothy 3, Titus 1, I mean, Paul said, look, he was talking to two evangelists. He said, look, my life's about over. You're going to have to go out and train leaders. And these should be men, he said in 1 Timothy 3. And they should be men married to one wife. Family men. What? Really? Family men who rule their homes, their households well. They're doing a really good job. They love people. They love serving. They're coming into a church, a ministry that's not just being dogged by scandal everywhere that you go, but they're representatives of Jesus Christ. I mean, I'm just paraphrasing what's in the scriptures. You can read it for yourself, 1 Timothy 3. We need to do more of that, I think. Actually look at what the Bible says. So we're in the Vatican. Trump is there. The Pope's funeral's happening. He meets with Zelensky. There's hope. There's hope now for peace. All the more so because of the iconic place that the meeting happened. We know we've got a shot at this because of the location. Listen to Fox News just giving a little bit of a more realistic look at trying to make peace with someone, with Putin, Vladimir Putin, involved in the negotiations. Clip five.
Trying to come to some kind of an agreement with Russian President Vladimir Putin is clearly not easy. On Friday, President Trump said a Ukraine peace deal seemed very close. But yesterday, after his meeting in Rome with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and days of deadly Russian strikes in Ukraine, President Trump posted that maybe Putin doesn't want to stop the war and will have to be dealt with differently. The president is back and forth on the prospects for peace. One minute it seems like it's close. One minute it seems very far away. Is that because of Vladimir Putin?
I think so. I think the president's analysis yesterday is right on. President Putin doesn't want peace. He wants to control Ukraine. That's why he started this war back in 2014 when he took Crimea and started an uprising that he directly supported in eastern Ukraine. And of course, what he's wanted since the full-scale invasion in February of 2022. He wants to control Ukraine, and in fact, he wants to change the European post-Cold War security order. And as long as he's not stopped from doing that, he will continue to push.
He wants to control Ukraine. But hey, we had a discussion in the Vatican. I think we're close. I think we're getting close. This is Marco Rubio, Secretary of State, over the weekend as well. Clip 12.
President Trump is about to mark his 100th day in office. It comes as a key campaign promise is to end the war in Ukraine. And against the backdrop of that extraordinary meeting between President Trump and President Zelensky, Mr. Secretary, is Russia and Ukraine now closer to a deal in the wake of that meeting?
Well, I think they're closer in general than they've been any time in the last 3 years, but it's still not there.
So close. We're getting so close. Still not there. New York Post. Trump wonders if Putin is just tapping me along, says he must be dealt with differently now. This is according to insiders. President Trump said Saturday that he's not entirely sure Russian strongman Vladimir Putin actually wants to end the bloody war in Ukraine. Well, remember when they were so close last week that Putin fired missiles into Kiev. I think it killed 8 or 9 people. I mean, the capital city. Trump signaled that he now believes Putin must be dealt with differently now and floated the tightening of sanctions to change Russia's attitude. It says the stark admission comes hours after Trump met the Ukrainian President Zelensky. So we've got to tighten up some of those sanctions. And yet, if you listen to some of the commentary on that very point, I mean, they're basically saying that sanctions, there's only so much that the United States can even do. Skip ahead to clip 13.
The United States does not import any oil from Russia. There's nothing to sanction here. You would have to convince the top 3 or 4 importers of Russian oil, which is China, India, European Union, and Turkey. My intelligence analysis reveals that India and China will not play ball with the United States. They have been doing by actually not buying Putin's oil. They actually are doing the opposite. Both China's and India's imports increased 40%. From about July, October last year. So there's nothing, and Russia only imports 3.5 billion in terms of trade to the United States. So there's nothing to tariff, and that is precisely why it hasn't changed Putin's behavior.
There's not a lot we can do with tariffs we're not taking, you know, another thing that's interesting about what you just heard there, who are the ones that are receiving so much Russian oil? She rattled them off. China, India, Turkey, and the European Union. Well, why would the European Union want so much oil from Vladimir Putin? It seems like Germany would want to really stick it to Putin, right? I mean, I'm just going by all the narratives that we hear. You know, Spiegel's now saying that America's the adversary of Germany. America's the big enemy that Germany needs to be concerned about. But they'll still come out with all the formal, you know, statements saying Putin's an aggressor, Putin's going to come after us next. Germany wants the war in Ukraine to continue. A dirty little secret, but let's be honest. You can go back. Look, we've talked about it from the beginning with Nord Stream and all these other secret deals. Everything's aligning just like God said that it would. This article, there's no reason for Putin to be shooting missiles into civilian areas, cities, towns over the last few days. That's Donald Trump on Truth Social. So there you go. Meanwhile, Germany, as I say, it has no desire to see the war end. Germany's out for its own self-interest. And is every other nation as well. And it's America first. Canadian elections this week, you know, Canada first, Europe first. Putin's putting Russia first. Zelensky wants Ukraine first. And you can meet inside of an iconic religious hall all that you want. And you're going to still see some evil dealings. That's just been the history. All through the 6,000 years of man. I don't need to go through all the history with you. I mean, look at some of these huge turning points. I mean, with Christ, I mean, that was a tremendous victory. Him willingly offering himself as a sacrifice, as he said to Peter. I mean, I could call 12 legions of angels right here if I wanted. But he submitted to the cruelty of man. And he actually died. He actually gave his life for Caiaphas and Pilate and Herod and the Roman soldiers that dressed Jesus in this royal robe, mocking the fact that he was the King of Kings. Christ died for all of them. Romans 5 talks about him sacrificing his life for a world that hates him and despises him. You don't, and I talked about this, I know, a week or two ago, but you just don't see the sacrificial love of God in this world today. Just the opposite. You see all the worldliness, the politics, the scandal, even in great religious institutions. That's just been the history. Germany can fake being outraged all that they want about Putin or anything else for that matter. It's got its own self-interest at play here. Spiegel, this article I mentioned, there's no sugarcoating the dramatic situation in which Europe currently finds itself. The old world order has collapsed. Donald Trump's America is no longer an ally. It's an adversary. The Western alliance is no more. Europe must now become strong itself or it will founder. This is stunning. And you're hearing calls like this coming from the elites, obviously news outlets, German publications. America is now the adversary. This is just so that the Trump people understand. You can waltz into the Vatican. You can take part in a holy funeral. I say holy in the sense that it's the Holy Roman Empire. And you can talk peace. And you can proclaim yourself as a peacemaker. But what does the Bible say about man's ability to obtain peace? The importance of this fundamental rupture for Germany cannot be overstated. In many respects, the Federal Republic of Germany was an American creation, with the U.S. having shepherded Germany down the path of democracy following World War II. America was Germany's big brother, and although the relationship was not always free of tension, there was never a doubt about the military support from across the Atlantic. That is now over, and to some extent, he's right. You've got all these other clips where U.S. officials are calling on Europe to do more. Go it alone. You got to work this out yourself. You got to take the lead. Listen to clip six.
Yeah, speaking of support, President Trump has frequently said that European nations need to do more. And he seems to get agreement on that score from Mark Rutte, the NATO Secretary General. Listen.
They have to do it, and they know they have to do it, because, and not only because President Trump says it's fair to equalize spending with the United States. That's one reason to do it, but also because there is the ongoing threat of the Russians.
Yes, Russia. We've got to defend ourselves from Putin. And I know we're buying all of his oil, but come on. It's cheap. It's good for us, and it's good for him. But, you know, really, we hate him. Really, he's a dangerous menace. Well, I mean, he is. He is. But why all these double dealings? Why all these back channel negotiations? Why all these secret deals? Sometimes the secret deals are made in, well, very religious institutions. Or iconic scenes, buildings, architecture, design. We put a lot of faith in human institutions and human diplomacy, and no faith in God. No prayer, no contact with God, not much to speak of anyway. A few acknowledgments here and there, maybe wear the cross on your chest. But that's about it. When it comes to actually living the way that Jesus Christ lived, you don't see very much of that at all. The world murdered the Son of God. And it was all prophesied, and Jesus understood this from the beginning. He came in the flesh, and he carried the weight of that outcome. The final act of his 3.5-year ministry, he carried the weight of that with him. For years, for decades, and he didn't want to go through it. You can see that clearly in Matthew 26, Luke 22, Mark 14. He didn't want to go through that, and he had to pray his way through. He prayed in those final hours. I mean, it's kind of a may. I've given a lecture on Gethsemane, so I guess it's on my mind more, but this was his final prayer session to God, at least the final one where he was on his knees, his hands lifted to heaven, and he was oozing blood out of his pores. And, of course, the daylight portion, the next day, he's being whipped and tried and questioned, and I'm sure he offered up a lot of silent prayers through the day. But, I mean, as far as getting up a great while before the day, didn't even get up. He was up right through the night. God sent an angel to give him strength. That was his final session, Gethsemane, going on for hours in prayer to God. What an example. For God to give him the courage and the strength to maintain a righteous life all the way through to the end, to give his life as a sacrifice for all. What a wonderful world it's going to be when everyone is being taught how to pray that way, how to establish that kind of contact with God. Above all, this is Spiegel, Europe will need a credible joint defense posture that also includes nuclear weapons. Okay. All right. Ideally, a common defense shield But if necessary, individual countries that are especially threatened will have to lead the way. Defense spending is finally on the rise, but that won't be enough. Europeans must plan together, harmonize procurement and development, and develop, joint intelligence capabilities. Beyond that, I mean, this is a lot of detail. This is what Europe has to do. I mean, this is the reality of today's world. This is how you bring peace. Beyond that, a Europe that wishes to be taken seriously must avoid a situation in which its foreign policy can be torpedoed by a single member state like Hungary. A coalition of the willing must be formed. What? Now, there's already a European Union, right? 27, 28 nations, I think it is. But Spiegel's saying there needs to be a new union formed. A coalition of the willing. Because Germany can't have its say or its plans torpedoed by Hungary. I mean, come on. Germany's got to lead the way. And then you have the U.S. cheerleaders saying, that's right. That's absolutely right. Take the lead. Build the nukes. Get the United Military Force and make sure Hungary or no other smaller nation can slow you down. You got to go forward. It says here, the maturation of Europe will be difficult and expensive. We will have to outdo ourselves. There is, however, no other choice. We have no choice. I mean, we've got Orange Hitler across the Atlantic. Now, I mean, he did show up at the Vatican and had a really good discussion with Zelensky. It was an iconic moment. But Orange Hitler, he's the menace. America is now an adversary. That's the headline. Der Spiegel's pretty influential, but there's your headline. America is now the adversary. America is the enemy. We need nukes. We need a united force. We need a new union. Well, they're about to get one. Bible talks about 10 kings. We've been saying for decades. Well, before the European Union, we were saying there's a union of European states coming. And then when they invited everyone in, we've been saying it's going to be downsized because the Bible says it's 10. And here's Spiegel saying a coalition of the willing must be formed. It's a union of iron and clay. That's what Daniel 2 says. It's short-lived. That's what Revelation 2 or 17 says. But it has the power of all those ancient empires of old. And you know, the Vatican, its history was just intertwined with those ancient empires. That's what you'll learn in this book. That holy, that's what makes the empire holy, is you've got this iconic scene. You've got this iconic city. I mean, its own nation, its own government. Right there in Vatican City. The Pope, by the way, called out Donald Trump. Or the Cardinal, the one that gave the homily over the weekend at the funeral, called out Trump for not building bridges. He's building walls instead of bridges. Maybe I'll touch on that more when we return. I've got to get into the case about that judge in Wisconsin, I think, Dugan. She's trying to let criminals go free in America. Illegals who beat their wives and carry out these acts of robbery and so on. A judge in a black robe tries to give them safe haven, I guess, even while there's a case going on with the victims in the courtroom over one crime. But again, the guy's rap sheet, it just goes on and on and on. And that, here again, as you would expect, the regime media coming to the defense of the indefensible. defending the criminals. That's what, again, they're on the wrong side, the unpopular side. I mean, people in America can see it. No, let's get the criminal alien out. But at MSNBC, they love to defend the criminals. They always have. We'll get to that and more when we come back from this short break. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
Daily news, Bible prophecy. See the connection on the Trumpet Daily. Are you feeling overwhelmed by the flood of news and information? You need something to sift the news and bring you only what matters most. You need the Trumpet Daily. You also need something to help you understand not just what's happening now, but what will happen next. You need the Trumpet Daily. Only the Trumpet Daily accurately matches daily news to precise Bible prophecies. Because Bible prophecy is the only tool up to the task of sifting the news down to what's important and showing you what will happen next. Join host Stephen Fleury every weekday. Go to trumpetdaily.com.
As far as the judges, look, we just arrested the judge, Pam Bondi, for impeding ICE enforcement removals. I said from day one, you don't have to support ICE's operations. You can support sanctuary cities if that's what you desire to do. Sanctuary cities can stand aside and watch ICE keep their community safe, because any public official, whether you're mayor, city councilman, or governor, their number one responsibility is protection of the communities. And ICE has been clear, we're targeting public safety threats and national security threats. I can't believe there's any elected official, and especially a judge, that doesn't believe we should be doing that, and they should be helping us. But ICE happened day one. You can sit aside and watch. You can argue against us all you want and protest all you want. But when you cross that line, I've said this 1,000 times, when you cross that line to impediment or knowingly harboring, concealing an illegal alien from ICE, you will be prosecuted, judge or not.
And so here comes the DOJ, Trump's DOJ this time, prosecuting a judge, an activist, a Democrat donor in a black robe, who's hiding illegal, not just illegals, criminals, ones that have been deported before. And of course, they're screaming in protest. No, Trump now. I mean, this is a dramatic escalation. Listen to all of the droids as they read from the same script, the exact same script in some cases. This is clip. This was, I forget who produced this online, but I saw it on social media, clip 17.
We begin tonight with the escalation in the president's crackdown on illegal immigration.
Today's dramatic escalation in the Trump administration's conflict with judges.
The Trump administration signaling a major escalation in its deportation efforts.
Today, an escalation in the Trump administration's battle with the judiciary.
Tensions between local and federal authorities over President Trump's immigration crackdown escalated today.
We begin this hour with a major escalation of the Trump administration's crackdown on immigration.
Begin with what appears to be a major escalation in the Trump administration's deportation efforts, and what is a major escalation in the battle here in D.C. over immigration and deportation.
This feels like an insane and reckless escalation from the Trump administration arresting a judge. I will tell you, you are not alone.
It's a dramatic escalation.
More aggressive moves, more escalation.
Trump's escalation of his migrant purge.
This kind of escalatory action.
This is a dramatic escalation.
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 We've seen an immigration, an escalation, an escalation.
Escalation. A dramatic one at that. Trump's DOJ actually going after a judge harboring illegal criminals. This is where we are. And of course, these people, with a total lack of self-awareness, 2 seconds ago, they were saying, nobody's above the law. I mean, it's fine for you. It's fine for Merrick Garland to go after Trump. It's fine for Merrick Garland to raid his house. I mean, even the comparisons, some in conservative media are comparing, well, you went after Trump, and now that it happens to be a Democrat judge, you're screaming about it. But the thing of it is, this Democrat judge was basically showing an illegal criminal alien the way out of the courtroom so that he couldn't be arrested by ICE agents. Trump didn't do anything. Supposing you are leaning to the left, try to name one thing that Donald Trump did that was guilty or that it was a violation of the law. I mean, I guess the first thing that would come to my mind is exaggerating the wealth or the cost of Mar-a-Lago or the worth. What else? What else did he do? They probably can't even remember it. But then you look at what this illegal was doing. Here's the endless loop of no one's above the law, as I say, 2 seconds ago, clip 16.
The idea that no person is above the law is a bedrock principle of American justice.
No man is above the law, no matter what the crime.
And I agree with you. No man is above the law. No person is above the law.
No one is above the law.
No one is above the law.
No one's above the law.
No one is above the law.
No one's above the law.
Nor any other title puts you above the rule of law.
No one is truly above the law.
That is what it means to have a rule of law. That is what it means to not have a king.
They're not above the law.
Nobody is above the law.
Everyone will be treated, as Merrick Garland has said, as, you know, equally.
Well, that no one is above the law, which is foundational.
No one is above the law, even a former president.
We have one set of laws in this country, and they apply to everyone.
No one is above the law.
The law is the law, and no one should be above it.
And yes, nobody is above the law.
No one is above the law.
No one else is above the law, including a president.
We have two justice systems in America. It has to be one justice system. And anybody who breaks the law should be held accountable.
And that no one is above the law.
No one is above the law, and our president is not above the law.
We've been saying that Trump's not above the law, Hunter Biden's not above the law, no one is above the law.
No one. No one is above the law.
No one, including the president, is above the law.
There cannot be different rules for different people in this country or in this state. And former presidents are no different because no one is above the law.
There you go. They sound so righteous. I mean, almost religious. Upholders of law. Right? Except when it's a Democrat activist hiding behind a judge's robe. This illegal alien came into the U.S. in 2013, came in illegally. They deported him. So this was over 12 years ago. He comes back, and the iconic scene for his trial happening in a serious courthouse in Wisconsin. He's on trial for beating his girlfriend. She's there in the court. The ICE agents had a warrant. They were waiting outside to arrest the guy as soon as the hearing was done with this activist judge. It says here, this is from the Washington Examiner. Here's what happened on April 18. They had the ICE officials, they had the arrest warrant for Flores Ruiz, that's his name. Six agents, all dressed in plain clothes, went to the courthouse. They hit their first snag when they identified themselves as federal agents. So, I mean, they said, yeah, we're with ICE. Well, the hearing's going on right now. So they waited. They waited, but they had the arrest warrant. So, you know, all these ridiculous details lied about on social media. They burst into the courtroom and caught the judge off guard or whatever. Didn't happen. They were outside waiting. It says here the agents then told the courtroom workers inside that what they intended to do after the hearing. Completely transparent. The courtroom deputy told the agents that he would notify the shift sergeant. When Flores Ruiz arrived, the ICE team watched him enter the courtroom. It was about that time that Dugan learned of the ICE agent's presence. And I mean, she was absolutely enraged. Right, because you're supposed to let criminal activity go on from illegals, I guess, indefinitely. No end in sight. Dugan, visibly upset and displaying a confrontational, angry demeanor, ordered the ICE team to report to the chief judge's office. The other judge escorted them down the hall to the office. So she sends them off to this other judge. While the ICE team was stuck showing their credentials to the chief judge's clerk, Dugan stormed down the hall and went into a non-public entrance to her chambers. When Dugan returned to the courtroom, Flores Ruiz and his lawyer, who had been talking to the clerk, walked toward each other and toward the public courtroom exit. That's when Dugan said, "Wait, come with me," and escorted Ruiz and his lawyer out of the courtroom through the jury door, which leads to a non-public area of the courthouse. She was helping this guy escape. And the woman that he was beating, she's right there in court watching all this. After escorting Ruiz out the door, Dugan returned to the courtroom and conducted other hearings. She just carried, "I've helped a criminal alien to escape," and she goes on about her day. This is the latest hero among Democrats. This is what has them calling Donald Trump a dictator, a tyrant. It's a dramatic escalation to go after this judge. This judge is above reproach. This judge is righteous. The attorney then learned that Ruiz, the prosecuting attorney, was there waiting to go after Ruiz. And then he's sitting there waiting and waiting and waiting. And then finally he learns that, no, they're gone. The judge, suspended that case. Says after Dugan helped Flores Ruiz give ICE the slip, he headed toward the elevators. But then, well, basically it's describing some ICE agent saw him leaving the courthouse, going through the elevators. He alerted the other five agents and said, "Hey, I just saw Ruiz. He's fleeing the scene." And then they had to chase after him outside the courthouse. It's unbelievable. The screaming over defending this judge. Says here, based on the facts laid out in the affidavit, prosecutors charged Dugan with obstructing or impeding a proceeding before a department or agency of the United States and concealing an individual to prevent his discovery and arrest. Both felonies. And here's the, what's the other montage that we had? It's clip 15. This is the talking heads, the regime media, outraged over going after this judge, arresting this judge, clip 15.
First of all, there was no reason whatsoever that they should have arrested her and put her in handcuffs. Absolutely not. She was not a flight risk. She could have voluntarily surrendered and not been in handcuffs, just as our former president was afforded that same courtesy. They also took those pictures and, you know, flooded that all over social media and TV. That is awful.
Where and when and how she was arrested, and the fact that she was arrested at the courthouse rather than her own residence, the fact that she was placed in a jail cell for hours before her arraignment was called in the court later in the afternoon. These things are unprecedented. Typically, upstanding members of the community who have no criminal history and aren't accused of a violent act are allowed to self-surrender at the time of their arraignment. The fact that they did not offer that courtesy to her and instead went out of their way to treat her harshly, I believe, is an act of performative cruelty on behalf of the Department of Justice.
This was put on to be a show. This is really to show intimidation of judges across the entire country, because we know that Republicans in Congress have not been standing up to these terrible policies. It's been our judiciary. It's been our justice system. And so now they're under attack.
Why would you possibly do this? And the answer is because we want to send a signal to the judiciary.
Immigration advocates have been warning we are on the verge of a constitutional crisis. Has that crisis arrived, Senator?
Yes, it has, unfortunately, because what Trump wants to be king.
If she, let's say she did escort this guy out the door. If federal enforcement agencies come to your courtroom and you help a guy escape, That is two things. One, it strikes me as maybe something illegal, but it also strikes me as something heroic. And in times of trouble, then people are sometimes called to do civil disobedience. And in my view, when people do civil disobedience, they have to pay the price. That's part of the heroism of it, frankly. Mm. And so you can both think that she shouldn't have legally done this, and that morally protecting somebody against, or maybe not even in this case, but in other cases, frankly, a predatory enforcement agency.
So that was illegal, but you know, heroic. It was morally right, say the preachers. Some of the same talking heads, by the way, that were in the no one's above the law montage. Andy McCabe, of all people, saying that this was performative cruelty to arrest her at the courthouse. After all of these pre-dawn raids to arrest non-violent criminals, and you've got to put criminals in quotes, associated with January 6th, took a photo. Did we really need to see, and as far as performing in front of the cameras, how did CNN know about so many of those pre-dawn raids? Did we really need to see Roger Stone in his underwear? Is that the way that this works? Preaching like preachers, preaching like the Pope or the Cardinal at the Pope's funeral. Pope Francis incessantly raised his voice, imploring peace and calling for reason and honest negotiation to find possible solutions. Build bridges, not walls. That was from the homily on Saturday. Build bridges, not walls. That was an exhortation that he repeated, Francis, that is, many times. I mean, he was an outspoken critic, just like the regime media you heard there. An outspoken critic of Donald Trump. You've got to build bridges, not walls. Now, with respect to the Vatican, of course, you don't just need a fence or a small wall. You need a massive wall. That I believe, is a massive wall. That's around the Vatican. There you go. Sam Googled this. Completed in 852, the 39-foot-tall wall enclosed what was inaugurated Leonine City, an area covering the current Vatican territory and Borgo district. The walls were continually expanded and modified until the reign of Pope Urban VIII. That was in the 1640s. So if my math is right, for about 800 years, they kept expanding. I don't know if there's any bridges. I don't know the lay of the land well enough. How many bridges are going into the Vatican? How many walls have been taken down? Because, listen, I mean, this is an iconic place. This is a religious place. This is where they make peace. This is the head, the headquarters of, I'm not sure how many are in Islam, but certainly one of the biggest religions in the world. What a barrier. I mean, that is quite a wall. And we heard over the weekend that he said it. I mean, he exhorted the world time and again. How much do you suppose the Vatican even spends on security? I've been there once, 20-some years ago. It's open. I mean, the main basilica, you can get in there as a tourist. But, I mean, everywhere you go around there, there's places roped off. There's doors that are locked. You can't just roam through. You can't go and say, hey, has anybody seen Francis? I'd like to have a chat with them. There's no bridge to go see the Pope. Let's just put it that way. And yet, he would like to see bridges, I guess, across into the United States. It's so easy, isn't it, to have hypocrisy exposed. This is one reason why they hated Jesus so much, because he exposed their hypocrisy. He exposed their evil hearts. And the solution, as far as the world is concerned, the solution for the religious world of that time, well, let's just kill this guy. Let's get rid of him. Let's remove this thorn in our side. And that's been the way of man. That book, The Holy Roman Empire and Prophecy, I mean, we've had so many other things to say about peace and the pursuit of peace. We've got a booklet on Isaiah that gets into that. There's lots of literature that we could plug. There's also lots more material and clips that I could play, but I'm already a minute over, but we won't charge you for that extra time. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you again tomorrow.